What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board this is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely.
So stay tuned. Upfront on the Voice of America, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, the story of human migration is as old as human civilization itself. For hundreds of years, people have been moving from one place to the other, crossing borders or staying within boundaries. They move for different reasons, but overall, there's an underlying need to find better opportunities, and these are mainly economic opportunities. But there are obviously a myriad of other reasons people migrate. In South Africa, migration from mainly neighboring countries can be traced to the discovery of precious minerals like diamonds and gold. And as the country transformed itself into a modern industrial economy, thousands of Africans from neighboring countries, from Mozambique, from Zimbabwe and others, came in to fill the demands of the labor market. There were, in fact, bilateral agreements between the then apartheid government and neighboring countries that allowed for such type of migration. Now, the result was the South African migrant labor system, which is a whole other conversation. But like anywhere else in the world, the byproduct of such migration into South Africa affected local economies. It affected the social and cultural patterns in these communities that people migrated to. And as people move, their cultural traits and ideas move along with them. And in many cases, they modify or they end up modifying cultural and economic landscapes in places where they end up. But that is not much of a threat until the economic prospects of people in those areas are on the decline. And so the easy scapegoat usually provided by the political leadership is that migrants are to blame for these dwindling economic prospects. So local people start looking at migrants as though they are taking their jobs, that they are taking their resources, and also they are taking their culture. The end point to this is that there will be violence, and there is violence. There has been violence in South Africa that flares up as recent as a couple of weeks ago. And this violence is directed at migrants. They kill them, they burn their shops, they displace them, and generally threaten their livelihood. When this happened a couple of weeks ago, the response around the continent was that of outrage and disbelief that South Africans would kill fellow Africans given the country's history. We all know the history, obviously. We won't go into that. But South Africa's President Jacob Zuma says that it's unfair to take the actions of a few South Africans and attribute them to a population of 50 million, that South Africans are not inherently xenophobic. Matter of fact, in his recent speech, he laid part of the blame on other African countries that he says are not creating favorable conditions that would discourage migration to South Africa. Either way, it does not absolve him and other South African leaders of the duty to protect migrants from violence. So on the show today, we will look at some of the issues around migration and xenophobia in South Africa, the role of the youth in perpetuating the violence, but also stopping it. And on the show, we'll have some voices of young people in Malawi responding to this issue. We have voices from Uganda and South Sudan speaking on this issue of xenophobia in South Africa. Stay tuned. This Upfront on the Voice of America.
Okay, I personally feel it's horrendous. It's terrible. It's just a disgrace to all the people of African race. And just to think that there are actually South Africans in other countries all over the world, how would they feel if something like this was to be done to them?
My thoughts on xenophobic attacks in South Africa is actually so absurd. And I feel It's really so uncalled for. Take a look at Zimbabwe, take a look at Angola, all these citizens who fought with you, you know, with ANC, to help the ANC to win.
I do believe that any human being has a right to live. So killing one another because he or she has a job that you don't have should be condemned world over.
What I think about xenophobia is, I think everyone is a foreigner somewhere else. So it's better we value because we are human.
Tuned to Upfront on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. Jackson Vungani is in Washington, D.C., and I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town, South Africa. We've got loads more coming your way, so keep your station locked right here on the Voice of America. The situation has calmed down a lot, Jackson, since the attacks first broke out a few weeks ago. We saw the first outbreak of violence in KwaZulu-Natal that then spread to Johannesburg here where I'm based. In the CBD, we had a few incidents. Now, there has been a sharp government response to it. The president commissioned a task team comprising of senior government ministers to actually get out on the ground and try to ease calm the situation. I have to say that most South Africans are appalled by what happened, completely shocked. It's really, really been a story that's rattled, you know, the South African psyche as we saw these stories play out in our media, as we heard the attacks. It's been really horrific. You know, most South Africans are acutely aware of the important role that our neighboring countries played during apartheid. Sadly, Jackson, South Africa is no stranger to xenophobic attacks. You know, most recently we had the 2008 outbreak that was largely centered in the Western Cape province, areas around Cape Town. You know, and we hear the same rhetoric this time around. These are the stories that we're hearing in certain communities where, you know, people are impoverished, where there is a lack of resources. And this is the type of reasoning we're hearing each time we see an attack that's xenophobic in nature. Put your flags up in the sky.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us. I'm in Washington, D.C. Nadia Sami is in Johannesburg, South Africa. And we're talking about the recent xenophobic attacks, the violence in South Africa that was characterized as xenophobic attacks in South Africa. This is not the first time that it's happening. Remember, we did cover this a couple of years ago, around 2008, when there were attacks in South Africa. We're trying to figure out some of the underlying causes of this type of situation, this type of violence. Obviously, has been condemned widely by African leadership, by Western leadership, including in South Africa. But we know South Africa hosts millions of migrants from around the world. So the question is, why are victims, the victims of these xenophobic attacks, mostly African? And to try and figure this out, I reached out to Lauren Landau. He's the Henry J. Leyer Chairman in Migration Studies, based at the Fletcher School and the Feinstein International Center. He was previously the South African Research Chair in Human Mobility and founding chair of the African Center for Migration and Society at Wits University in Johannesburg. Landau's work explores human mobility, citizenship, and development.
I think what's important to realize is that it's not just about immigration and it's not just about Africans. The vast majority of immigrants coming into South Africa are from neighboring countries, from Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho. But the attacks have not only been against them, but also people from, particularly from South Asia, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, India. But importantly, we've also seen attacks against other South Africans, people who are of the wrong, you know, speak the wrong language or the wrong ethnic group, even the wrong political party. So it's not just an immigration issue, but the vast majority of the victims have been immigrants from other African countries.
And this is not the first time it has happened. So what are some of the underlying causes of this type of flare-up in violence over the past couple of years that we've seen it?
Right. I mean, since 1994, when South Africa sort of ended apartheid and became free and democratic, we've seen attacks, some quite scattered, and then periods of more intense violence since then. The causes are varied. Some of them relate to underlying attitudes about foreigners and outsiders. It's a distrustful and divided country due to its history. But more particularly, it has to do with how governance works at a local level. People are competing for scarce resources. There's a government, police and others who are seeking legitimacy, and there's a great deal of scapegoating and mobilization against foreigners as their way of building political power or avoiding criticism for policies that have failed to make poor South Africans any less poor.
Are foreigners kind of an easy scapegoat for politicians in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you see in South Africa is something that we see worldwide, you know, that immigrants are often seen as undermining labor, undermining rights, and politicians have used that to try to distract attention. And you see that at a national level, increasingly at the national level, but it's been even more so at the local level, where they're blamed for the shortage of housing, they're blamed for crime, they're blamed for pretty much anything that's negative in the country.
Has this current flare-up been any different from the ones we've seen in the past, either in the response or in the magnitude?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's most distinctive about the attacks that have happened over the last few weeks is that they moved into the city centers, whereas before they were largely in the poor townships and to some extent largely invisible to the media and to the middle class. What I think we've seen that's most disturbing about the response this time is while the police have been quick and the government leaders have been quick to respond and say the violence is not acceptable, the response has been flavored by what you could be described as xenophobia itself, a sort of argument that the reasons these attacks are happening is because there are too many immigrants. And over the last day, we've started to see the results of that, which are the police rounding up immigrants and starting deportation, simply saying the gangs are right, there are too many here, and they need to be taken care of.
In the recent speech by Jacob Zuma, President Jacob Zuma of South Africa, accused other African countries of not taking care of their own people. And I feel like there's no sense of ownership for the violence that is happening in South Africa by the political leadership, the top political leadership in South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've said that there is violence, and they've argued that, well, South Africa is a violent country, and to some extent, foreigners are just getting caught up in it and denying that this is something that's particularly aimed at them. But now that it's become evident that there is a sort of xenophobic strain to this violence, there has been an effort to, yes, make this into an immigration issue, to absolve themselves of responsibility, rather than saying, look, this is a problem of governance. The number of immigrants are not that great. They're great in some areas, but rather to say, look, immigration, the solution to this is not solving our problems, improving the police, improving security, but the problem to this is shutting our borders. And that doesn't work. It's never worked for anyone, but that seems to be the approach they're taking.
Is there an understanding of how many migrants from Africa currently reside in South Africa?
Well, we have the same statistics that the government has, which suggests that about 4% of the population, which is about 2 million people, are in the country. That's people who've been born outside the country, which includes South African citizens, but it's primarily people from nearby, which is a very small percentage of the population. What's important, though, is that they cluster in very particular areas. And it's often in those areas where the violence is happening.
Migration, including here in the U.S., migrants are accused of coming in and not assimilating and not being part of the larger system and instead creating little enclaves of their own little communities. Is that something that is happening in South Africa, too, of migrants from different parts of Africa? Do they come in and live in, like, in a specific place?
Well, the vast majority of the African immigrants are from Mozambique and Zimbabwe. Many of them speak a language that's similar or identical to South African languages, and they can largely pass as locals or almost pass as locals. What we do see, though, is particularly Somalis, Ethiopians, and, of course, people from other continents, whether they're Chinese or from South Asia, who don't integrate so well or are not able to integrate so well. And there has been resentment against them, like you say, in the United States, where they're seen as being aloof or outside or unconcerned with local politics. But, of course, that no justification for the kind of violence that we've seen.
Now, there's been talk that one of the biggest instigators to this current violence was King Goodwill Zwelithini, who's a Zulu king.
Well, no, I mean, it was the comments that he made were said in a meeting in Zulu, which I unfortunately don't speak. Mm. But I have been, I listened to the speech and to the translation, and it's very clear he echoed language that we've heard a lot on the streets, calling immigrants lice or fleas. And suggesting that they needed to be removed. He's not the only one to have made statements like that, but of course, when you're in a position of authority like that, people tend to pay more attention than they would otherwise.
But is he being a mouthpiece of some larger dissatisfaction in the community, in society? Are immigrants truly taking jobs away from South Africans?
Well, I think he is being a mouthpiece for a broader sentiment, and he's certainly not, as I said, not the first to express that. That doesn't mean, however, that those sentiments are valid. While there is competition in some sectors, and migrants definitely outcompete South Africans for some jobs, all of the evidence that we have from our research suggests that that's a very small number of people who've been put out of work, and it's a number that's compensated for by the number of businesses that migrants start or the kind of skills that they bring to businesses which allow them to expand and hire other people.
It's real upset, and it doesn't make sense. Those people are killing people from other countries, yet they're also working from other countries. No. Some of them, they don't have skills. Eh? They don't have skills.
South Africans, they are our brothers and sisters in Africa. We have to be one people. And they have to live together. Leaders should come out and educate the public. And they have to look for the immediate solution for this issue.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Henok Fente, my colleague here from the Horn of Africa service, he has also covered issues related to migration in East and Southern Africa. And Henok spoke to the families of the people that lost their loved ones during this violence. Henok says that he does not believe that this type of violence is actually being called by its rightful name.
Well, first of all, I don't think what's happening in South Africa is xenophobia, because you don't see Chinese workers, Pakistani workers, or American and Europeans being attacked. It's Afrophobia. They don't like Africans coming. I mean, when I say they, the people who are organizing. And by the way, during our interviews, we talked to a number of Ethiopians who were directly affected. There were two brothers. One of them was burnt in his shop. Another one, both of them suffered major injuries. One of them passed away. The other one had third-degree burns. It was just terrible. Yeah. And the community was trying to cope with that. And what they had told me at the time was, okay, look, the people who are organizing these attacks are mainly vigilante groups. It's not the South African population. It's South Africans were actually supporting them. They were their neighbors in the buildings, and they were hosting a number of African migrants. But all in all, how we dealt with it is, we don't want Ethiopians, since we broadcast to Ethiopia and Eritrea, we don't want Ethiopians and Eritreans to think that they're the only ones who are being victimized. So giving it the full context that this is an attack on Africans who are mainly working in South Africa, opening up shops, small business. That was the direction of the attacks.
Is there a big Ethiopian population in South Africa?
Yes, I spoke to the ambassador in South Africa. He estimates close to 100,000 Ethiopians living in South Africa.
That's a big number.
That's a huge number.
And what do they mainly do?
Mainly, they have small business, so they are in retail business. Some of them are in import export, but mainly they open shops in towns in townships. Mainly.
Let's talk about Ethiopia itself, the government, the response. And in a broader picture, the story of migration in Ethiopia, we know what happened. You know, obviously you working in the Horn of Africa in the past couple of weeks, you've been privy to a lot of these really horrendous stories about migration and death and violence from ISIS killing Ethiopians in Libya to the accidents on the Mediterranean. Then to, you know, there's xenophobic attacks in South Africa. But what has been the response of the Ethiopian government?
So let me go about this in a timeline and issue by issue, country by country. In South Africa, what happened was the prime minister with the Rwandan president Paul Kagame gave a statement the next day, basically condemning the attacks and saying that the South African authorities need to restore security and ensure the safety of African migrants in South Africa. That was a statement. And then the foreign ministry, including the foreign minister himself, on social media, and they appeared on national TV and they said, here are the phone numbers for you to call. Now, we asked some of the migrant workers in South Africa, the Ethiopian embassy, including the ambassador, moved their offices to a Durban hotel, and they were trying
to help.
To reach out.
Right.
But people are not interested in that because they don't want to go back to Ethiopia. And we asked them, no, we would rather die here in South Africa than going back to Ethiopia. And that's what they said. It's an economic opportunity issue. It's an economic inclusion issue. In Ethiopia, they feel that they're not included in the country's whatever economic progress that the country is making. So that's why they fled. I mean, it's not an easy route for them. The reaction when ISIS cold-bloodedly murdered close to 30 Ethiopians and Eritreans. It's mainly Ethiopians, about 28 estimated. The Ethiopian government, especially the government communications minister, went on the state TV and radio, and he said, we don't know whether these people are our citizens. At that time, people had already seen their loved ones dying live on international broadcasts, right, and online.
He's the government official trying,
trying to distance himself. But that translates into, you know, you just lost your loved one, and here's a government minister on national TV saying,
We don't know who these people are. We're not sure if they're our people.
And there was another one. He said, this will be, and I'm paraphrasing here, a lesson to people who are risking their lives.
Right. I saw that quote.
No, that quote really instigated.
Quote, by the way.
Yes. I've been covering the migration and refugee issue, especially in the Horn of Africa region, which is huge. It's a nightmare for international organizations like IOM, as well as UNHCR, but most importantly for the migrants and the refugees themselves and their families.
Welcome back. This is Front on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us. I'm in Washington, D.C. Nadia Sam is in Johannesburg, South Africa. Bongani Mtetwa is a reporter for the Sunday Times in Durban, South Africa. He has covered this specific issue quite extensively also. He was called on by his paper to report on the xenophobic attacks that as soon as they started in his area. He says that migrants in general in South Africa coexist with local South Africans peacefully. And to echo some of the sentiments of President Jacob Zuma, that South Africans are not inherently xenophobic. So, Bongani, when did you start covering this story?
We started covering it as soon as it broke out in one part of Durban, which is called Isipingo.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on the south of
And Durban. Is this something that was in the works and it was a spontaneous breakout of violence?
No, it was a spontaneous breakout of violence, and everybody was caught by surprise, as I indicated to you earlier. When we had xenophobic attacks in 2008, we thought that was the last that we would see of them. So it caught everybody by surprise. No one was expecting that it could start.
What is the population of migrants in your area? And here we are talking about Durban. That's where you are, right?
Yeah, I don't have the population offhand, but we've got many foreign nationals who are residing in Durban, who are from various African countries.
Okay.
As far as the Democratic Republic of Congo and Nigeria.
And who were the main perpetrators of this? Because there's a feeling outside of South Africa that it was widespread. But in his speech recently, Jacob Zuma alluded to the fact that this is a very small population of people, small group of South Africans who are perpetrating this kind of violence, and that it's unfair to kind of attribute it to, you know, 50 million South Africans who are peaceful and who are kind of welcoming to migrants.
Yeah, I'll totally agree with the president. It was this time around, it was not as widespread as it was in 2008, where even though the epicenter was Johannesburg and then it spread across the country. This time around, it started in Durban and it spread to only sections of Gauteng and it didn't go as far as other provinces in the country. From what I hear is that the problem was sparked by a particular employer who, when workers went on strike in Isipingo area, he decided to employ some foreign nationals to do the work, and then that is what sparked this whole thing.
Okay, so local South Africans felt that they were being marginalized in favor of foreign nationals, and that foreign nationals are willing to work for less money and also willing to kind of undermining their struggle to, for better employment prospects.
Yeah, and you would understand that that happens against the backdrop of the fact that, there is deep resentment within some communities that foreign nationals are taking their jobs, which is not entirely true. And as I indicated, that the other problem that we have is that in South Africa, there is a high rate of unemployment. So there is a competition of resources. So there is a feeling that, some employers in South Africa, they would rather prefer foreign nationals, because there is also a perception that South Africans are lazy, they don't want to work. But foreign nationals, are always willing to do whatever job, no matter how menial that job is and no matter how bad the pay may be.
Okay. And so what happened to the other foreign nationals, other migrants in that area after these attacks?
Some are still being kept at refugee camps, which have been set up by government. In Durban, there are about three camps. One is in Chatsworth, one is in Isipingo, the epicenter of these xenophobic attacks, and north of Durban in a place called Verulam. Some of them, especially Malawians, they want to go back to their own country. But some still want to continue staying in South Africa, even though they are still scared.
Are you saying that life has gotten back to normal in these areas and some foreign nationals have begun to reopen their business and are operating normally?
They are, especially in the city of Durban, they are operating normally. And those who are running some kind of smaller businesses, they are back at work. I had an interview with some guys from the DRC who are back at work, even though they still have some degree of safety, but of fear about their safety. Yeah, but they are back at work.
What about justice for those whose lives were lost and property destroyed? Are they bringing people to book for having committed these crimes?
Yeah, there are people who have already been arrested for these crimes. As you know, that sometimes the slow pace of justice might be too slow. But there are people, for example, in the case of Masitole, the Mozambican national who was knifed in Johannesburg.
Yes, Sitole, yes.
Yes. Yeah, for people who were responsible for his murder, I have already been arrested and have appeared in court.
Bongani Mtetwa in Durban, South Africa. Bongani, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @upfrontafrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.